You're listening to the Roundtable Podcast, episode 31.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Humphrey.
And I'm Dave Robison.
And you're listening to the Roundtable Podcast.
Each week on the Roundtable Podcast, Brian and I invite writers to come onto the show and present a story idea to us and our esteemed guest host.
And then we dig into it, massage it, make it feel right at home, and eventually something comes out that resembles a little bit of what we like to call
literary gold. So this is the Roundtable Podcast and Massage Parlor.
You got it.
Friends, as no doubt you've heard, Brian is rocking the cell phone with us today. So we'll for some reason, the internet has decided that Brian has not sacrificed enough virgins to it. The gods of cyberspace are displeased. So we're trusting to the gods of cell phones to sustain us through this next, hour or so.
That's right.
You hanging in there otherwise, bud?
I'm trying. It's a little hot down here, but I'm doing okay.
Hot in Colorado? Really?
No, just down in my basement.
We need more fans. We need a sump pump or some such thing.
That's right. Well, every time that I get ready for this, I have to like shut the window because the dogs go crazy outside, and then it just becomes a little bit of a pressure cooker.
Yep. Yeah. I hear you. I turn off the ceiling fan. You know, so we have a nice calm. The sacrifices we make for quality, I swear.
No shit, right?
Well, let's sacrifice our own little personal time here, Brian, as much as I enjoy it.
Of course.
In the name of awesome guest hostage.
Let's get into it.
Absolutely. Friends, you heard him a few days ago on our 20 Minutes With segment. He is a podcaster, an artist, a costumer, an author of so many tales, not the least of which is the astonishing The Battle of Blood and Ink, a fable of the Flying City, available in all fine bookstores and a few cagey ones, but still, it's worth picking up there. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the big chair at the round table, Mr. Jared Axelrod. Jared, thanks for coming back, man. We appreciate it.
Oh, I love this big chair.
Isn't it
so
comfy?
Comfy.
We have totally overstuffed that. And that bottle there is yours, by the way. Feel free.
Sweet.
Nothing but Cadillac here at the round table, baby.
Do I get to take it with me, or do I have to finish it all while I'm here?
Well,
I can do either.
Let's go.
A problem.
You are nothing if not accommodating. I so respect that. I'll leave that to your discretion, sir, depending on how the workshop goes, I guess. So, Jared, you've got, obviously the Battle of Blood and Ink has been consuming your time. I know we had a chance to have some FaceTime at Balticon, which was awesome. What's coming up? What's on Jared Axelrod's day planner? Fill our listeners in on what to expect from the Axelrod studio in the coming weeks and years.
Well, I finished a novel not so long ago.
Really?
Way of the Dodo. It's a prose book. It's a middle grade steampunk adventure, and it'll probably be my last steampunk book for a little while, unless we get to do more Battle of the Blood and Ink graphic novels, unless Way of the Dodo becomes a series. I think I've got a good handle on that world, on that subgenre. I don't need to play any round anymore except for those two areas.
Okay.
Because Battle of the Blood and Ink is a fantasy book. It takes place in a mystical world. And Way of the Dodo is very history-based, so I feel like I've got it with both barrels. I can move on.
So something a little more contemporary next time?
Maybe. We'll see. I'm working on short stories right now. I've got one due from the anthology Have Blaster Will Travel that's based in the Bulldogs role-playing game universe.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
I love the Bulldogs universe in general, so it's a really... really nice thing to be able to write a story for that.
Is it going to feature Mr. Chubbs by any chance?
Yes, it is about Chubbs. It is about Captain Chubbs. It is, in fact, the story of how Captain Chubbs got his captainness.
Oh, very cool. An origin story. You can't go wrong with an origin story.
Yeah, it's really good. It's one of the darkest books and stories in the anthology.
Oh, wow.
It's Bulldogs.
So can you in a Reader's Digest condensed format, can you introduce our listeners to Captain Chubbs, those that don't know him?
Oh, sure.
Just real quick.
Captain Chubbs was a role-playing character that I created for Bulldogs games. He was not a captain at the time. He was just Chubbs. And then Brennan Taylor, one of the writers of Bulldogs and the main guy behind Galileo Games, said he wanted to do a LARP. He got my wife involved because my wife works for Galileo Games. And he said, I want to do a Bulldogs LARP. And I said, well, if you're going to do a Bulldogs LARP, then I am going to make a space bear puppet, because the alien race that Captain Chubbs is an Ursinomite, which is basically a space bear.
Okay. Yes.
And they're 3 feet tall, and they're adorable, but they're ill-tempered, and they're just a lot of fun to play.
And quite and often so heavily armed, as I understand it.
Yes. Well, they're grumpy. So, because I don't do anything halfway,
I proceeded to
make a 3 foot tall, so a life size Ursimonite Captain Chubbs puppet. I got my good friend Danny Oakley to help me out with the lights and sounds. Well, there's no sounds, so just lights. So he could smoke his cigar, and so his rake would light up. And it was also a working Nerf gun, because Brennan wanted there to be a Nerf fight at the end of the LARP, and so there was, and it was amazing. He is a fully functional puppet.
And that's awesome.
Just strap him on and...
Oh, so he's a strap-on doll.
He is. You had me to just pick up. So
we may be pushing the envelope of our explicit rating at this point.
Someone had to.
And thank you, Jared. If it was going to be anybody, by God, it was going to be you. Or Nobilis Reed, one of the two.
Yeah, if I'm pushing it farther than Nobilis's, then he has a lot of explaining to do.
So what about conventions? Any conventions coming up for you?
Not really.
do you do cons other than Balticon?
I do, but right now, just with finances and with the way things, personal events line up. For example, I was going to be at SPX just to have fun at the Small Press Expo, but then some friends decided to come in from out of town, and I would rather hang out with them. And then I was going to go to New York Comic Con this year, but my friends Chris and Erica are getting married, so gotta go to that. That is going to be fun. And it's one of those things where it's judging between the two. I frequently choose quality time with friends over conventions.
Friends,
I've done a
win.
Lot of conventions.
Sure.
As both a professional and a fan, and I like to pick and choose. I love Balticon, so I will move heaven and earth to go to Balticon every year.
Sure.
But more and more, it's that kind of thing where it's like, what is really the give and take?
What's going to feed your heart more? What's going to feed your soul more?
Right. And what's going to drain the bank account less?
That too. So, Jared, give our listeners all the awesome places where they can find Jared Axelrod goodness.
Oh, all over the place. Well, JaredAxelrod.com is probably the easiest place to go.
Sure, good hub.
That has links to everything else.
Okay.
But there's also FablesOfTheFlyingCity.com, which is the Battle of Blood and Ink hub, and it's got all the podcast episodes. It's got links to where you can buy the book. It's got links to Tor's 20-page preview of the book. It's got 2 mini comics up there if you want more content.
Yeah, baby.
The graphic novel is not enough. There's my Tumblr, Born of an Atom Bomb, which has all my research for projects that are going to happen at some point.
Someday, maybe.
Someday. There's the comic Ask Comrade Cockroach, which is going to start up again. I had to put it on hold because of grad school, but I'm not in grad school this semester, so I can put it back up. And
yay.
That's at jaredaxelrod.com/cockroach. And Twitter is Planet X. Facebook is just Jared Axelrod.
Excellent. And we'll make sure all of that wonderful linkage makes it into the show notes.
That's right.
But what I'd like to do now is take a brief pause to showcase another awesome podcast or glorious ebook or other audio property that's out there on the interwebs. And when we come back, we can workshop us a story. Sound good, gents?
Sounds
like a plan.
I like it too. So, friends, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Flames. Any who step through may stride across the world and beyond. A precious, precious few, the ferryman, can guide you true through any flame and emerge from a crossing as young and strong as when first the flame kissed them. Fleets travel space for lifetimes, reach new worlds, challenge the black between galaxies, all thanks to the ferryman. But is there a price hidden in the ferryman's fire? A science fiction anthology featuring Matthew Sanborn Smith, J. Daniel Sawyer, Ed Robertson, Patrick McLean, Nathan Lowell, Brand Gamblin, Jason Andrew Bond, Jake Bible, and John Miro. Learn more at servingworlds.com. Walk the fire. The universe awaits. May the ferryman take you.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, and working right into the workshop proper. So, Dave, who do we got?
Oh, my goodness, yes, because the round table is nothing without the brave and courageous souls who, through commitment to their craft and the desire to improve their stories, step up and offer a tale for discussion. And that is always a source of much gratitude and respect on our part. And today, coming to us all the way from West Plains, Missouri, please welcome to the guest writer's chair, Mr. Justin Hall. Justin, thank you very much for bringing a story for us to discuss, man. We appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you letting me on here.
Absolutely. So Justin, obviously you are committed to the writer's craft or you wouldn't be here. What has driven you to the madness of pursuing the path of the wordsmith?
I've always wanted to be a writer. I've always had great stories in my head. From little kids when I was playing with the action figures in the dirt pile, the early, mid-teens when I wanted to be a comic book art writer and started our own comic book company, to the 20s when I, you know, just sat on my butt and didn't do much. I hit 32 last year and I looked at my daughter and I go, I want my daughter to be proud of me. And I just decided I'm going to write a story, and I want to put it on paper. This is that time. You know, I've got lots and lots of notes, and I've wrote lots and lots of, I started a story, and I just couldn't find something that, I'm guessing that next step is where I'm having the trouble, and I'm really hoping you can help.
Oh, dude, that is so why we are here. And you brought a story for discussion, yes?
Yes, I did.
Why do I keep asking people that? That's just...
I just want them to say no one day. Like, I had to bring this up, right?
No, I got nothing, Dave. I just wanted to be on the show.
I guess I'm done.
Okay, friends, thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye. Sorry.
It could happen.
It could happen, but it never, ever will.
No.
Well, Justin, then this is your time, but we're going to turn the mic over to you. Give us the title, the genre, the format. Is it a short story, a novel, a series? What do you got going there? Introduce us to the world, introduce us to the characters. Give us the basic gist of the story. We'll give you 5 to 8 minutes to cram all of that in. I know it's cruel and wicked, but I know you can do it. So we turn the mic over to you, sir. Take it away.
Okay, my working title is New Genesis, and the genre is the overpopulated post-apocalyptic supers. My hook line is, 1 year after everyone in the world develops superpowers, 3 soldiers return home to a town divided. The world is major solar flares wipe out all of the Earth's satellites. Everyone in the world goes unconscious for a few hours. When they wake up, they slowly discover they have developed various superpowers, anything from laser eyes to animalistic features. 1/10 of the population has become ravagers, of people who, with hyperadrenaline glands, who band together. think rage zombies with a little bit of with a lot of intelligence. The major characters are Alex, also called Sarge, is an experienced combat medic with the ability to create a stream of burning napalm. He has served 3 terms in the Middle East and is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder due to the actions involved in getting home. His biggest conflict is his drive to be with his family and keep them safe, but he does not want to use his power. There's 3 protagonists in the story. Another one is Dallas Harper, an early 20s Southern boy. He has spent the last year as protection in a combat medic squad. He has the ability to project a force field around himself and others. In his time getting home, he has begun a relationship with fellow soldier Kendra, a black woman. His conflict is he is easily swayed by strong-willed people like his racist father. He wants to be with Kendra, but is afraid of what other people will do and say. Kendra, the other protagonist, is an early 20s black combat medic with the ability to minor healing. Her conflict is she wants to be with her lover, Dallas, but her responsibility to her father and community is pushing on her. The town that the story is set is... have been divided into 3 major factions. The first faction is the largest, is surrounded by a makeshift wall surrounding a shopping center and a few neighborhoods, holds about 12,000 people. The leaders are a Catholic priest, a priest and priestess of a Wiccan coven, and Morris Jones' ability to create multiple copies of himself is pretty much the de facto administrator. The next largest community is the black community, surrounded by a 12-foot rock wall, erected by Samuel Barnes, Kendra's father, using his ability to control Earth. Samuel is the voice of reason in an increasingly more agitated community. There is roughly 4,000 people besides Samuel, a prominent Baptist priest whose preachings is becoming more aggressive. The final community is led by Jacob Harper, Dallas's father. A highly aggressive racist, he has gathered a small army of 500 like-minded men to raid the surrounding area. They have set up in the local Walmart across the interstate. 3 soldiers, Alex, Kendra, and Dallas, arrive home to discover their town has segregated itself into 3 distinct warring groups. The soldiers split up to find their families. Kendra's father is the leader of the mostly black group. Dallas's father is controlling the highly aggressive group of rednecks, and Alex's father is in the remaining group. Kendra's father is shot but not killed. During group infighting, Dallas's father controls his people with an iron fist and enslaving or killing anyone who defies him. Alex and Kendra reluctantly take leadership positions within their respective groups during a meeting to form a peace alliance between Alex and Kendra's group. The town is attacked by ragers. In the chaos and aftermath of the attack, Dallas's father's people attack Alex's group. With the help of Kendra and her people, Alex and his people are safe. During the attack, Dallas's father realizes his son is in love with Kendra, a black woman, and tries to kill her. This forces Dallas to stop him, almost killing him to save her. That's the outline of my story.
Okay. Dude, that's perfect. That gives us key points that we can work with and plenty of material to chew on.
Absolutely.
So, Justin, what are you hoping to get specifically, as specific as you can, what are you hoping to get out of this conversation? What do you feel that we can bring to you that will help you write this story?
Well, mostly I'm having a little bit of trouble with the middle. I've got them coming into town. I've got the town firmly pictured in my mind, but I feel like my plot outline is too small. I feel like there could be more in there.
Okay.
That's pretty much it, is what the middle part I'm having trouble. I've got a really good ending scene, and I see how it opens, but yeah.
Okay. Well, let's riff on this a little bit, and I think there's plenty to riff on. But before we do, Brian, please cover our ass and give the classic Roundtable Podcast disclaimer, if you would be so kind. Brian?
Did we lose him?
Oh, we lost everybody.
Hello? I'm here.
I'm here.
I don't think I am. Am I here? Am I here?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Then we just lost Brian. Oh, my God. We just lost his minutes. Friends, sadly, during the recording of this segment, Brian's, can you believe this? Brian's cell phone ran out of minutes. And with the internet being as nightmarish as it has been, we lost him completely. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to email Brian. And I'm going to say, Brian, send us your notes. And as I get input from Brian, I will go ahead and post them up and see if we can't get the ball rolling that way. By God, we will not be stopped in the workshopping of this story. So let me send email Brian a quick email. Okay, I've sent Brian his email. It falls to me to deliver the disclaimer, which is this, Justin. During the course of this conversation, ideas are going to be flung willy-nilly. It is going to be a veritable cornucopia of ideas, and quite frankly, some, or perhaps all of them, might be complete and utter bullshit. From myself, or from Jared, or from anything that Brian manages to email in over the next 45 minutes or so. Please keep in mind that this is totally your story, that Jared, myself, and Brian will weigh in as much as we can, but as I say, this might be complete and utter twaddle. Are we good with that?
I think I could use an injection of twaddle.
Everybody could use a little twaddle now and again. Excellent. Well, then, Jared, I will turn it over to you. It is our custom to let our guest host lead off the discussion, so... what are your impressions of Justin's story idea? Questions of clarification are often customary at this point, just to clarify plot points. So, sir, start off our discussion.
Well, I like the setting here. There's a lot of potential. But I do have some questions. And some of these got answered in your description. But because it is still in its rough form, not all of them did. And my answers from what you read may not be what you intended. So these six questions I'm going to ask you are very basic, but I just want to make sure that I know where you're coming from before we start.
Sounds good.
All right, so the first one is, who is the protagonist? You say you have three, and
yes.
That's a mistake.
Okay.
don't do it.
Why is that a mistake, Jared?
Unless you are very, very talented, and sometimes even if you are, the moment you have more than one protagonist, you are competing with yourself for the reader's attention. When you split up your narrative, and it does sound like you split up your narrative three ways, there's going to be one narrative that the readers are going to enjoy. There's going to be two others that they're not going to enjoy as much, and that's just the way we are as people. We like to pick our favorite. And that means that if you have two other protagonists, two other narratives, two-thirds of your book is going to be flipped through, skimmed, ignored, or outright hated so they could get to the part that they like. Also, most people, even if they're really talented, cannot juggle three plot lines successfully. George R. R. Martin can, but he's written many, many books before he tried to do that, and most of those books had one protagonist. If you had to choose one of these three interesting people, who is the protagonist?
I would have to say that would be Alex.
Yes. All right, which is very interesting because a lot of the conflict comes from Dallas and Kendra. But if Alex is the protagonist, Alex is the protagonist. Now, what does Alex want?
He wants to keep his family safe.
He does not.
Well,
that is something that he does want, I'm sure, but that is a very passive want. Okay. That is something that's guard duty. He has to want something, even if that's just, I'm getting my family out of this town. That is a war zone, which is similar to what I just left. That's a want he can act on. If he's just going to hunker down in a bunker with them, that's not a very interesting story. So what does he want?
He does not want to have to become the leader of his group, but everybody pushing him to become the leader.
All right. That is, again, a very passive want. Don't tell me what he doesn't want. What does he want?
Does he want security? Does he want peace?
When he comes home and sees his hometown divided up into three sections, he sees his family in danger, what does he want to do?
End the threat?
See, and that's what I have been contemplating what you've been saying for a while, and what I had saw was that up until that call of action, he will become the leader, and he will, because he wants, his drive is to protect his family. He's fought a year to get over here. He mm-hmm. will, but that first one third of the, not even one third of the story, that first two or three chapters, he's like, people are pushing him to lead, and then he's forced to use his abilities as a leader and his ability to his superpower to lead, to defend the community, which is aggravating his post-traumatic stress disorder.
All right. Well, we'll take that, but I have some issues with it before we get to it. We'll take it.
That's Jared, part of the motif here is we can do what ifs.
So yeah. We will.
Okay.
We will.
Okay.
I just want to get through these other ones.
Sure. Sure.
So who is the antagonist in this?
That would be Jacob Harper. He's the leader of the most aggressive group. It's their highly aggressive racist group. He believes in power, and the most powerful person should lead.
Always good to have a racist as a villain. Always. Always good. All right. And why is he in the way of Alex's leadership? The point of the antagonist is to be in the way of what the protagonist wants. If the protagonist is to rise to be this leader of men, how does Jacob Harper keep that from happening?
And see, I see where you're going with that, and I was looking at it more, he doesn't want to have to act, and because of what Jacob Harper is doing, he is having to act. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah.
But I definitely see what you're going with.
All right, so who is the audience for this book? Who is the people you want to read it? Who do you think will appreciate it the most?
Other than me, I'm not 100% sure. I am writing this story for me. This is the story I always want to read.
That's true. And what's the theme?
The theme is responsibility and the theme is responsibility to others and oneself.
All right. Well, that's three things. None of them are your theme. what are you trying to say about responsibility? Are you saying that responsibility is hard? Are you saying that responsibility forces men to do things other than they want to do? Are you saying responsibility kills parts of your humanity for the greater good? What are you saying about responsibility? Because I do think you are saying some stuff about responsibility in here.
It's pretty much what the responsibility to others. Responsibility that is pushed upon you by from others isn't always what you want or think you need to do.
Okay. All right.
We can work with that.
All right. So here's a few things just off the top of my head. Listening to your thing and looking at your answers to these questions. Alex is not your protagonist.
Okay.
He is passive protagonist at best. He is reluctant. Reluctant protagonists are very difficult and never fun. and he doesn't have a really good, strong conflict with your main antagonist, who is Jacob Harper. I would say your protagonist is either Dallas or Kendra. Either one of those have strong motivations. They want to be together. And they are in a situation where it is very difficult for them to be together. And they have a relationship with the antagonist, Jacob Harper, that puts them, he is keeping them. What they want is to be together. He, by his very nature, is keeping them apart. So I feel like that's the story you are trying to tell. I like the idea of Alex. I like the idea of a man who comes home to a war zone after trying too hard to leave a war zone. I feel like that has very powerful. But that is something that Dallas can feel. That is something that Kendra can feel. And in your brief synopsis, which was brief, and I get that, there wasn't much as to what Alex and his conflict is. And I think part of your problem with having a middle is that there's not much for him to do because he doesn't have a conflict.
I can see that.
But I think Dallas and Kendra, either one of them would make wonderful protagonists for the story. and wonderful viewpoints for the story. Everyone loves the Romeo and Juliet story.
Oh my goodness, yes.
So I feel maybe Alex should be put off to the side. Maybe he should still be in there. Maybe he dies early to show that shit got real. I don't know.
Sure. That's a possibility.
But I do feel like Alex is not a very good protagonist for the story that you're trying to tell.
I can definitely see that.
Okay. Let me throw in some stuff.
Theme, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everything's still on the table. Very definitely. I got some emails from Brian. Brian says, first of all, loves the idea. Excellent setup and established conflict. His first question would be, why do these specific people have these specific powers? And his caution would be to make it seem as random as everyone else's, but pivotal to some plot point without it coming across as planned or contrived. So that's a good question. Justin, do you have any indication of why these people acquired these particular powers?
Yes. With Alex, him being a combat medic, he has an extremely aggressive, extremely brutal power. I mean, if you've ever seen Napalm in action, it was supposed to be, he does not want to use his ability.
Which seems kind of there's a in built-in conflict right there. It's antithetical to his chosen path.
Right. With Dallas, his father was extremely aggressive and believes in power, and he feels like force field is very weak and passive power. So he looks upon his son as, you know, a failure. With Kendra, honestly, I rolled it on a gaming chart. I thought I wasn't even going to give her an ability. I wanted her character to be more powerful, more important. So I wanted her to have a really weak power.
Okay.
Also. So minor healing ability.
So it sounds like that these powers manifest based on the emotional personality terrain of the individuals themselves. Is that a fair assessment?
That is, I've never thought about it, but I could definitely see it that way.
Well, and if we look at it that way, that gives us some intriguing opportunities to use these powers as an insight into their deeper personality traits. And maybe some insight into their true natures that they may be masking. It would be very cool to have these characters come in looking one way, behaving one way, and through the course of the story, through the conflicts, and through the grinding against the events that challenge those facades that they put up there, that it ultimately reveals why Alex has napalm, why Dallas has force fields. And, you know, Kendra as a medic with healing, that's a little easy. And I'd just like to put a question mark next to her power. If you're not married to that, to put it on the table to maybe consider alternative powers for her that might be a little more of a challenge for you as a writer and for her as a character.
No, I can see that.
The other thing that Brian wrote was, second, it strikes me as a little too constructed to be dealing with the father of Kendra versus the father of Dallas. One is black, the other racist. Maybe if it isn't the father of Kendra, but a matriarchy instead, then it could be her mother, which would bring up a whole crapload of other issues that could be mirrored in the younger protagonists.
Okay.
That's our Brian. The notion.
I like that idea. I like the idea of it not being two fathers, but someone else in Kendra's community. It doesn't even have to be related to her. It could be someone who she just looked up to.
Sure.
And that kind of brings out, takes away some of the on the nose stuff if you did that.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump in then and say that there. I will mirror everything that's been said. This is a great setup, a great environment that you fostered. One thing that struck me, just a general overall comment, Justin, is that the story that you're telling could be told if none of these people had superpowers.
Yes.
And if that's the case, then maybe we need to find a different story or a different... a different perspective on the story that makes the superpowers a more integral part of the story that's being told. Because you really have. You've got Romeo and Juliet rocking here. You've got the Capulets and the Montagues.
Yeah, there could be any sort of cataclysmic event that would cause the normally sleepy town to start doing
polarize.
Factions.
Yeah.
Yeah, once society crumbles.
Right.
You could... Who knows what could happen?
So, and I don't know what that is, Justin. I don't know what we can do, but I wanted to put that out there on the table as well, that if we can engage these superpowers more specifically into the story, and I don't want to make it a MacGuffin. I don't want to turn it into some kind of plot device, but if we don't have a strong engagement with these superpowers, because it's a cool idea, but if the story doesn't depend upon it, then why is it there? Does that make sense?
No, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to internalize it yet, but I do definitely understand it.
We're just getting started, baby. We'll come to it eventually. one other question I had they're coming back from the Middle East after the world has collapsed. What's going on in the Middle East?
That is a very good question.
Why are there soldiers in the Middle East when the world has fallen apart?
Well, I figured the world has fallen apart. If you're over there, you would want to come home.
And gotcha.
The way I see it is the president's last order was to bring home the soldiers. You know, the communications are gone. So you got all these, you know, an aircraft carrier can last for 20 years on its nuclear power. You know, I figure, you know, all those, they're ferrying soldiers home.
All right. That's awesome. All right. So basically what you're saying is that before the solar flares hit, these three people were in the Middle East fighting the war, whatever that war is. And then the solar flares hit and chaos and anarchy erupts. And they are they are an ocean away from home.
Yes.
The journey from the Middle East to this sleepy little town. Holy crap! What a story!
Which unfortunately is not the one you're telling.
But, it could... Now, here's what I'm wondering, and I'm just putting this out there. I have seen this done to good effect, where there are multiple storylines going on, one of them being a retelling of the journey of how they got here. You know, maybe all three of them are carrying the wounds and scars or relics and trophies of the journey that brought them here. And through the resolution of these conflicts that they are confronted with when they finally get home, we are also telling the tale of how these people went through hell to come back home again, and why home is so important to each and every one of them.
Right. I can definitely see that.
Okay. And I don't
want to bring up a good point, Dave, though, about the spectacularness of war, for lack of a better term. And one of the questions that your scenario brings up, Justin, is that if everyone on the planet gets superpowers, surely people that they are fighting with and fighting against also get superpowers.
Yes.
And so before this order to bring everyone home, there is a superpowered war, I imagine. And then that brings up the question is, why aren't you telling that story? I wonder if the small story that you were trying to tell, which I like, in this sleepy town that is gone beyond society, I wonder if perhaps, and this is the what ifs that we mentioned, if that's the only place that has superpowers, that if somehow this town has developed superpowers, maybe not everyone in the town either, maybe just very influential people. You have the Ragers, that stinks. and in that element, this kind of lack of society falls through, and perhaps our heroes, our protagonists, do not have superpowers until they spend some time in the town, and then their powers slowly develop over the course of the story.
So Jared, are you suggesting that this town is the source of the superpowers?
See, yeah. That is what I'm suggesting as a possibility, as to bring in the scope. I think if you say the whole world and everyone has superpowers, that is a big deal. That is a very big deal, and that's a very epic deal. And that's a... I'm not saying you can't write that story, because that story certainly deserves to be written. But it's a lot to ask of yourself. And it's a lot to ask of the reader to follow all of that and not to be like, tell me more about that superpowered war. That sounds really cool with the I-beams.
Could Justin conceivably... as you say, Jared, the notion of the smaller story within the larger story is always a cool dynamic to work out. Do you think there could... I mean... I would imagine it would be a chaotic war. I would imagine that nationality is going to collapse.
I mean, it'd be a hell of an opener. It would be a hell of an opener.
Yeah.
Have a superpowered war. But I don't think it's the story that Justin described.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. But I'm thinking in the context of making the superpowers more integral to the storyline. If this is happening around them, and these, you know, and the focus of the story stays within the world, within this town, and our only view of what's going on out there is through these characters, then the richness of not only the protagonist but also Samuel Barnes and Jake Harper and the who's the leader of the Catholic Wiccan group?
I haven't really got him fleshed out, but there's a Catholic priest. And then a Wiccan priestess priestess.
The context of each of these characters, I think, becomes more vital because everyone out there is having to choose how they're dealing with this, with the world ending for all intents and purposes, with ravagers at the door, demons crawling at the gates.
It feels like three books, quite honestly.
Yeah, it could very well be.
It feels like book one is superhero war, book two is the journey home, and then book three is what Justin described to us, what happens when they get home.
Yeah.
It feels very big. And yeah. I guess the question is what story Justin wants to tell.
That's true. That's true.
Because I feel like trying to encompass all of those elements is asking a lot.
Justin, what are your thoughts on the subject?
No, I definitely see what you're going with. The reason why I picked the small town is because, you know, I figure the small town engagement, you know, the world is going to chaos. Why would you continue fighting a war when your people's going hungry? I mean, why would you go to work if your boss can carry around a bazooka in his eyes? I figure society would just crumble and there wouldn't be governments.
But people would band together. I mean, the strong people would gather people to them, whether they're charismatic or just powerful, drawing those types of people to them. It's like The Stand. You know,
The Stand.
Yeah.
Have you read The Stand?
A long time ago.
Yeah. So you've got...
This is very The Stand.
Yeah, you've got Satan over here, and you've got God over here, basically, and different people gravitate to different types of leadership. Now, it doesn't have to be that polarized. It can be, you know, there could be 40, 50, 100 different factions that evolve. And this town, you know, what if this town is situated at the crossroads between three of them?
And I was actually, I saw it that way, and like, this would be the first book. And I mean, I don't want to be thinking about the next book, but I can, you know, in the back of my mind, I could see, you know, Alex's rise to the, you know, leading his, protecting his town, and then being forced to step up. And, you know, it spread from there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a rich world here.
Yeah.
We've, you know, spent the last 15 minutes talking about the possibilities of the world. So there's definitely stuff he can come back to and definitely stuff he can develop.
You want to talk about the characters, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, let's do that. By all means, let's do that.
I really like the love relationship.
I do too.
That Dallas and Kendra are there. I do like that Dallas's father is the villain. That's wonderful. I'm not sure how comfortable I am with a faction that is just the black community. I feel like that's a little simplistic and a little uncomfortable. But that's just me. Again, we're dealing with a plot. It could have more shading and more depth in
and it could be, as Brian suggested, matriarchal.
Right. I mean, there's lots of things you can do. You were just giving us a brief note, so
right.
I'm not going to harp on that. I would like to know more about Dallas and Kendra, because I do think they're the most interesting people you talked about.
Justin, do you have any more character insights that you can offer about Dallas and Kendra? If not, we can riff.
No, I pretty much, that's what I have for him. And, you know, I think you're hitting it right on. I was going for a forbidden lovers, star-crossed lovers, Romeo and Juliet thing with them.
Yeah, it's a great story.
That might be the best way to go with him, downplaying Alex. And I wanted a character from each faction.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying the town, the black community, you just see it. I actually basing this town off a town I used to live in, and this is exactly where it would divide up in this town. Mm-hmm. You would have the good old boy southern people who are a little highly aggressive. You've got all the other white people pretty much who aren't extremists, and then you've got this very segregated community of black people that, you know, with some prominent leaders who are smart people who, you know, and that's exactly where I saw the town dividing. But focusing on the Dallas and Kendra might be the best way to go.
Yeah,
I feel like you don't need three factions. I know you're drawing from what you would think that the small town you're basing this on would divide up into, but I think for the simplicity of your story, you only need the two. It doesn't change the antagonist if you have two factions. He's still an asshole, and that's great. it doesn't change. Alex can still be reluctantly made a leader of the other faction. Kendra can still have a connection to the current leader when they show up. Maybe the current leader dies, and Alex has to step up. And there's all sorts of conflict that comes when you bring your characters closer together. I think splitting them apart into three different sets is not the best idea.
Yeah.
I think even if Dallas is Jacob's son, he should not be in Jacob's camp. I like the idea of Jacob saying, you are of no use, you're weak, you're gone, I don't want to see you. And
there's a crisis point for Dallas.
Right, and he's like, do I join up with the people with who I'm having sex with, which would be a bonus for him, or does he try to go back to his father? And
well, and there's that, you know, there's that question of, you know, does he, at that point, when his father casts him out, if we go with that route, then his self-worth now goes through the floor. And what kind of man is he at that point, at the darkest point? What happens to Dallas? And I don't know, but putting your characters in that dark, dark place is where it's the forge. It's the testing ground. Are they heroes or are they wimps?
No, I agree.
You can almost have a Coriolanus moment there where the lion is cast out only to come back and wreak havoc.
Ooh, yeah.
So you could play that angle if you wanted to. I really think you just need the two.
Yeah. Well, and his powers...
Tell the story.
I mean, that force field power can be used aggressively if he just takes on an aggressive mindset.
And that's where I saw the ending of, you know, him, using his father, using his power aggressively on his father. And that's kind of where I saw the ending, the big dramatic. And knowing and realizing that you're right, Dallas and Kendra is the main protagonist of the story.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Let me throw in a couple more notes. Brian's been sending me emails this whole time.
Frantically typing.
Yes, I got all this stuff. Brian, of course, really likes the Ravagers, but feels like after they were introduced that we don't hear a lot about them anymore, nor any of the other types of mutations. That's one of his points. And the other one is, it seems that you may be setting him up for this already, but he thinks that Dallas will need to become the strongest of the three by overcoming his weak personality. Boom. Yes, Brian, we are so with you, dude.
He's very insightful, that Brian.
He is very insightful. That's why he's my co-host. I love that boy. You said he's easily swayed by stronger people, and I just see him being pushed around and pushed around until he has his snapping moment when he becomes who he is really meant to be and becomes a force to be reckoned with. So, yes, definitely. Justin, let me throw out a what if.
Okay.
Have you seen the movie The Mist?
Stephen
King? Okay.
I've heard about it, but I've not seen it.
All right. Never mind that reference then. I think
but
it would
you
be...
ought to, you ought to watch it.
It's excellent. It's a very creepy, horrible, scary thing.
Go read the book. It's also a book.
Yeah. Stephen King. Can't go wrong. But let me propose a challenge for you. Let's use the scenario of this town. See, and Jared, this is going to appeal to you because this is kind of like the Old West, baby. here's a town that sit on the border between two or three factions. Okay, outside there, the cataclysm is still going on, but groups have started to form up. They're gelling and congregating, and this town is in between all three of them. It's a point of contention, and it hasn't gotten ugly up to this point. But maybe it's situated on a bluff. Maybe it's a strategic position. There's something of value here that all three factions want. Now, you have them when they come in. The town itself has already become polarized. What if you hold off on that? What if these heroes come back and the Ravagers attack? And nobody's polarized yet, but the Ravagers have attacked, and maybe one of the other factions comes in and helps bail them out, okay? And say, now you owe us, and we'll be back to collect. That's a little simplistic, but you get the idea. And through the assault of the Ravagers and this faction that has come in, the town is torn apart.
Okay.
And now the audience gets to witness the escalation of all of these characters, and your protagonists, your POV characters, are all drawn up in it, and the dynamic of seeing a town polarized, because there's outward pressure and there's inward pressure, and now everybody is pushed to the limit, and now you've got a pressure cooker of my God, we got a ticking clock. We've got Ravagers that are mounting a horde over here. We've got these three factions that are giving us grief. Oh my God, the dynamics that come out. What do you think of that?
I can definitely see some potential in that.
Jared, what does that resonate to you at all?
I'll do you one better on that.
Oh, get it, son.
It's Dallas who saves the town from Ravagers. That they show up, Dallas saves the town from Ravagers using that force field or whatever. Maybe it's his something he learned in the military, but he saves the town. And Jacob is like, all right, this is the trump card I needed. He has now unbalanced this situation. There is now power unbalance. This guy is a hero. And because he's my son, we are going to make this happen.
Oh,
we are
yes.
gonna take over the town.
And then he says,
through,
oh, yeah.
Whatever happens causes Jacob to say, Dallas, you're not my son anymore. And then he has his Coriolanus moment.
Yeah. Well, and he tells his dad that this is the woman I love.
Yeah.
And now so, Dallas has to choose, like you said before, between the woman he loves and the father who suddenly is very proud of him. That's beautiful.
No, that's great. That's actually a lot of some of the things that I've already been thinking about. You've kind of put him out there, maybe in a little bit different form, but definitely see that. Taking almost all of the story ideas that I had for Alex, taking out the reluctance and putting it on this character, I can definitely see Dallas being the main protagonist.
Yeah, yeah. And Alex can be a supporting character. He can be, you know, one of those characters that has two legs, one on each side of the various factions. Maybe he's going to be the diplomat, the negotiator who tries to find and balance things out, and it's just not possible.
As a family man and as a father, he could be a very good kind of guidance figure for Dallas. Right.
Yes. Yes. A mentor.
I do think he's still important because I think you have a perspective with him that would be very interesting, but I don't think it's strong enough for him to be the protagonist. I think Dallas has got to be it.
You know, Alex could be the mentor character. He could be, you know, severely wounded in the fight and therefore is kind of taken out of the central core action. But maybe he was a colonel in the military and has insightful wisdom to impart.
No, definitely. Definitely, I see. The story's going in a slightly different direction than I saw it. But I think it's a more focused and honestly a better story.
There's excitement there. There's danger. There's tension.
Protagonist.
And an active protagonist, yes. And I'm going to take Brian's side on regarding the antagonist. Make sure that he believes in his heart that he is doing something good. That his way is the best way, not because it's his way, but because it is the best way as far as he's concerned. Make him authentic. Don't make him I'm a racist and therefore I'm a bad guy. Make him a likable racist. Can you do that?
That's the part that I was like, can I do this character justice? I want people to hate him and like, you know, and at least respect him or get where he's coming from. So yeah, I figure he was the character I was going to have the most trouble with.
But well, the easy way around that is if you can make him a horrible person, but make him funny. Like have an actual wit and not just like telling racist jokes, but telling a very insightful and funny outlook. And that's where the charming comes from. Have you seen Inglourious Basterds, the movie Inglourious Basterds?
No, I have not seen that.
We keep pulling references he hasn't seen.
Well, I haven't seen that one either, to be honest, so.
Guys!
Anyway, you know, I didn't get the
character.
I didn't get the reading list.
If it's not on audiobook or a podcast, I probably haven't seen it in a while.
The idea of having a character who is absolutely reprehensible, but at the same time, witty, and having him someone that we laugh with and hate ourselves for doing it, is a good way around that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm thinking of Samuel Jackson's character in what was it, the third Die Hard movie?
Yeah.
He was dead set against white people. He did not like white people.
I remember
that. But it wasn't because you got the feeling it wasn't a. Well, it was kind of militant. Of course, he gets thrown in with Bruce Willis, and they have to save the day. And by the end of it, they have a mutual respect. And that kind
it's
of
not quite the arc you're going for, but whatever.
Yeah, and I'm I guess what I'm suggesting is, does Jake have to be the arc antagonist? He can definitely, he's a block. He's a block to the protagonist's objectives, definitely. But what if the larger antagonist is not necessarily one person in particular, but, you know, time, circumstances, inflexibility in general, and he just happens to be the icon, the iconic representation of what the larger issue is. I don't know if I'm making sense here.
You kind of are. I think it'd be easier just to make him a monster.
Yeah, and I'm against monsters.
A likable monster. I mean, he doesn't have to be a cartoon. I think Brian's right not to make him a cartoon, not to make him over the top.
Yeah.
Because that kind of casual racism is way more scary and threatening than some, you know, caricature of someone who's dreaming of plantations. So
right.
I think you should definitely pull him back in the sense that the racism should be a defining characteristic, but not an overwhelming one. I think you need someone for your hero to butt up against, and he can be a representation, like Dave said, of all the other things that is going on in his life, certainly. But you have such a great setting here, these two factions, and have him be in charge and have him be the villain is too golden to toss aside.
Well, what if Dallas has an older brother whose power isn't as strong and has always lived for some reason in Dallas's shadow in his father's eyes. And with Dallas being gone and assumed dead, because all these people, I'm sure, are assumed dead.
Oh, yeah.
In as long as it's taken them to get back and with all the chaos and pandemonium. So now, in Dallas's absence, this brother is finally gaining some small measure of the respect he thinks he's earned from his father. And then Dallas comes back, and oh, God, that pisses him off. Because not only does it come back, but as Jared says, you know, he helps save the day against the initial Ravager attacks. And now you've got someone, you know, maybe Jake is more of the paternity. I'm seeing Lord of the Rings, Denethor. And
yeah, there's some Faramir action going on in that.
Yeah, Faramir and Boromir, that whole thing. That's, you know, sibling rivalry and paternal appreciation is always a part of it. And then the same, not the same thing, but Kendra can be dealing with her own issues as well. We don't want to forget Kendra because she needs just as big a part in this, I think, as Dallas does to be a worthy mate if this is going to be a union that the reader can get behind, right?
Right.
I would say Kindred might have that sibling rivalry. I feel like you don't need to add anything to the Dallas-Jacob conflict. I feel like that's golden.
Okay.
Fathers and sons butting heads. That's you don't need to gild that lily.
Yeah.
But I do like the idea of someone who has risen to one of your characters' places in their absence and now does not know where they fit in the pecking order, and neither does one of your protagonists. I feel like that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And Kendra might benefit from that more than Jacob.
Because really the story that you're telling here, Justin, and the reason, and I don't want to keep going back to the external factions as well as the internal ones, but what you're describing in through this story, and yes, I don't want to get away from the love story and the smaller story that's happening inside, but it's about power.
Yes.
It's about power and leadership and responsibility, and how individuals, I mean, all the different ways that individuals are burdened by that, are empowered by that, and are driven insane by that. And whether it's a large faction of supers outside that are applying pressure to this community, and that's, I think, the other thing that might be missing is, what is the thing that bound this community together in the first place? Something, you know, some sense of loyalty, of comradeship, of something. You know, maybe these people all just kind of herded here, and this is, you know, the ruins of a ghost town that just happened to have shelter from the Ravagers, and now these people have all been thrown together. Or this community has been around for generations, and there's such a rich history here in this community that these people will not abandon it because this is their home. I kind of like that better.
Yeah. No, I
yeah, either one would work.
I was seeing more, there was a couple of people who were standing up and becoming leaders, and people were just gravitating toward them. But I can definitely see the other way also.
Well, and if you don't polarize it until the story starts, then you can explore through, you know, a little discovery writing, a little outlining, a little exploration. You know, what Jared was describing, you know, do some flash fiction on each of these characters. You know, riff on a story of, you know, pick five or six townsfolk and explore them. See what they are. And then John Miro does this great thing where he basically comes up with all the set pieces and then lets physics, psychological and emotional physics, take care of the rest. Just put them together and see what happens. And, you know, explore how these polarizations break out. I mean, obviously you have a plan, but, you know, you might discover that there's different factions, different priorities that arise when you think about the town before the cataclysm and then what becomes of that town after the cataclysm.
Yeah.
And I think that would be fascinating from the reader's standpoint and incredibly empowering for you as a writer.
Definitely.
So.
And one of the strongest pulls in these small towns is history. It is
yes.
The history of people's families, the histories of people who have come before.
Achievements, past achievements.
And so when these characters are coming back home, that history is going to envelop them whether they like it or not, the same way it always happens when you come home from college or whatever. You find yourself being pulled back into who you were then. And that's very difficult to escape.
Right.
I think it's important to remember that none of this that you're describing happens overnight. Everyone gets superpowers overnight, but it is going to take a long time for your heroes with superpowers to get to the township. So a lot of things could have happened with the gaining of superpowers by the time they get there, with society having fallen apart.
Right.
And in that time and in that history, there's a lot of simmering conflicts that you can make that will just explode once these three foreign elements come back.
I like that. I like that a lot. And that ties in that history and that heritage and that legacy. And it gives the impression that something happened here before page one.
Right.
And that's critical. Justin, just a quick side question. Did everybody in the whole world get superpowers?
Yes, that was the whole idea.
Okay, okay.
You know, I wanted, with the way I looked at the world, you know, we could handle one major catastrophe. But if you throw on all of the satellites being blown, destroyed and everybody getting superpowers, the governments couldn't handle it.
Sure.
Just crumble.
What if, and then again, just a what if 80% of the world got superpowers?
Mm-hmm.
So,
or 20%. I mean, that's still 20% of 7 billion is a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if each percentage suggests a different story. With 20%, you've got, can people band together against the renegade supers who are trying to take over the world? With 80% being supers, normal humans have become second-class citizens and offer no value, can become slaves to the superheroes.
With superpowers, I would say even 20%. Humans can become second-class citizens.
Yeah.
1%, perhaps, even, people
sure.
become second-class.
Especially if you got a Dr. Xavier out there or something, or a Magneto.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have the power dynamic is so different that you could have a very small percentage of people with superpowers, but as long as they throw their weight around, it's going to be very difficult to stop them from doing what they want.
And so now in that mix of exploring control and power and responsibility, you now have the added level of, does having power mean you're a leader? What are the qualities that define, you know, what defines a hero?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's something to consider as well. Guys, I'm looking at the clock and it's starting to tick down. So what I'd like to do is, first of all, go around the table, starting with you, Justin, and just do some final comments, final observations for Justin. Justin, for you, I'm asking, is there anything we didn't touch on or something that you, in the discussion, that you would like us to expand on a little bit more before we start wrapping up?
No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I really think I'm going to have to look into Dallas and Kendra's story. I'm going to go watch the Mist and the Inglourious Basterds. If you've got any other suggestions that might help shape some of the character conflicts, maybe with something I'm going to go reread The Stand also.
Oh, yeah.
If you have any other suggestions, that would be good.
There's a lovely
Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet, really?
Yep.
Really? So, Jared, final thoughts, something to send Justin on his way with some gold in his pocket to craft this tale?
I think you've got a very rich setting. I think you've got a really nice conflict with Dallas and Kendra and Jacob. I feel like there's definitely stuff to mine out of here. So you're starting really strong. When you sit down to outline, and I hope you're going to outline, please tell me you're going to outline. It's very important. When you sit down to outline, I think you will find that because of these characters, because of the setting, it'll come together pretty quickly. You've got some real gold here.
Yeah, Yeah. Just distilling Brian's general notes and observations, he thinks the settings are super strong and give you a huge amount of situational potential just based on the buildings themselves, you know, a shopping center or Walmart, so on and so forth. He loves it. He wants to read it. And he's so sorry he dropped off. And, and Brian, so are we, bud. We miss you, man.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for myself, Justin, I definitely, I think what we've discovered, you know, depending on what we've talked about, you glom onto, the depth and intricacy of this town, has grown significantly. And, I agree with Jared that outlining and timelining things so that you can see how it all fits together is a huge, huge asset in your pocket. But also, sometimes going off the rails and exploring a character in depth, doing rich backgrounds, doing a history of the town, even if half of it or if 90% of it doesn't end up actually in the story, understanding the foundation, again, before the cataclysm, even generations before the cataclysm, you know, what is it that this town, this place is to these people? Why are they still here? Why haven't they just split and headed off to the nearest military installation or Washington, D.C. or whatever? Something has kept them here. And something has kept them together. Exploring that, I think, will really give you some rich food. Plus, it'll define the environment that these three, with their own issues, are bringing in. That'll give you a very clear understanding of the ping-ponging effect of existing structures as these new forces are brought into it. Also, I'll just say one more time, I think the journey to the town could be a cool side story as these three discuss, you know, you'd mentioned Alex's post-traumatic stress. You know, maybe they're all suffering from that a little bit because they've probably gone through some pretty crazy shit getting to town. And that could be your voice describing what's going on outside and setting that tone and further explaining these characters, you know, how did they get the scars, the limps, the wounds, the treasure, you know, whatever relics they've brought back, weapons, food, you know, a whiskey bottle. Where did you get that whiskey bottle? Those little details make all the difference. So, and I'm rambling. So I cannot wait to see where you go with this. Now, Justin, here's the deal. When you write this and put it out in the world, whether it's picked up by one of the big six or an indie or small pub, or you just decide to self-pub that bad boy, you let us know. And the instant that thing goes out into the world, we will bring you back and we will knight you. We will make you a knight of the round table. We have a sword. We will do a ceremony. We will record it and put it up for the world. And we will put your picture up there in the loyal order of knights of the round table. That's the carrot, baby.
Thank you.
You are absolutely welcome and very much deserving. And thank you, Justin, very much for bringing your story and joining in with the conversation. This has been a really good and I think an enlightening workshop. Jared, dude, thank you very much, not only for taking the time, but for bringing such a strong beam to the story, to the discussion, to the workshop, and really, I think helping Justin see some different perspectives on the story he wants to tell. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a blast. Happy to do it again.
Good time. Technical difficulties aside, we still muddled through. Yes! So, friends, thank you, as always, for tuning in. We so appreciate you hitting that play button. Spread the word of the Roundtable. If you're digging it, then the best thing that will make you feel so good is sharing the goodness with others. So please, by all means, do that, however you do that. We're on Twitter at Writers Podcast, so feel free to follow us out there. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/Roundtable Podcast. Ooh, you didn't see that coming. And you can drop us a line at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. And please feel free to continue the discussion. on the comment section of each post. We've been having some great discussions as far that continue this workshop process as some of our listeners chime in and offer other suggestions. So Justin, definitely check back and make that scene, bud.
I will. Definitely will.
Awesome. Very good. Congratulations, gentlemen. Workshop achieved. Literary gold found. Writerly goodness, a frothing fury. And friends, come back in a couple days. We're going to start this all over again. New guest hosts, new stories, new 20 minutes, all sorts of wonderful goodness for your creative consumption. Until then, I know Brian would urge everyone to go write, and I will tell you, you find what you're looking for, so go find the awesome stuff. You will find it if you go looking for it. Until then, friends, thank you again so much. We will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBroyer, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is at writerspodcast, or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.